I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. This is the second half of the first of my interviews with the conspiracy theory wing of the Christian right, a community that is at least as big and influential as the secular techno-progressives that my show is aimed at, and they are probably much better armed. Know thy critics, especially when they suspect you of being the spawn of demonic aliens trying to open a stargate to hell. Tom Horn runs the RaidersNewsUpdate.com news service and is author of the novel The Ahriman Gate, which fictionalizes the role of UFOs and the Nephilim, angel-human hybrids, in an end-times scenario. We pick up the conversation with Tom explaining how he came to believe that human intelligence is the result of angel-slash-alien genetic tweaking of our hominid ancestors, presumably at the direction of God.
When you look at what we do know, the scientific record about the appearance of man, it does seem to just be all of a sudden. You know, we still don't have records that reach back very far in terms of anybody's cosmology. We're a brand new experience. We're a brand new experiment. We're a brand new planet. It only goes back, 10,000 years or something in terms of what we can prove in terms of civilization and records. And when you go back to the beginning, the Assyrians and different ones, you find these obelisks that have these animals that have human bodies and lion-like bodies with human heads. It could be that all of that is just nothing more than magical representations or mythology or whatever, but it could be that these were ancient people who were trying to record something in terms of something that happened to the earth. The gods came down, they involved themselves with the human species, and they seem to need this vital energy. They seem to need our biological, molecular matter as kind of a construction material through which they extended themselves into our material world. That's the story of ancient texts and sacred texts and old records, and it's around the world. So I guess that was... I'm not sure how much time we have here. It seems to me like we're just about out of time.
Well, I'm actually going to roll it over and use you for a second show, so if you don't mind.
That's okay.
Because I find it so fascinating. But there are some other non-Christian religions that have adopted a similar idea of guided panspermia, that human beings are the product of alien creation of some kind. But I don't see how that's consistent with a biblical understanding. Why would these beings have been under God's direction in the creation of human intelligence on the planet?
Well, of course, some people, the Elohim, some people say that what we are interpreting in the Hebrew text as God was these ancient astronauts that came here with their super intelligence and took early hominids and advanced their evolution and created what you and I are today, or something very similar to what we are today, the human species. That certainly is one way of looking at how the Earth was here with whatever early or primordial forms of life it had on it. And then all of a sudden, you have Mesopotamia, you have the Sumerians, you have civilization, you have people that just seem to come from nowhere overnight. And these are the same people, the earliest religions, the Hebrews, the Sumerians, the Assyrians, the Egyptians finally, and then later on the Greeks, who are telling these stories about something that came. It involved itself with the human race and had this need to blend its species with the human race, altered whatever was there, whether we're talking about taking chimpanzees. And as I understand it, by the way, I think you even advocate for uplifting chimpanzees.
All great apes, as a matter of fact. But yeah,
what's that?
All great apes, not just chimps.
Well, and in order to illustrate things about personhood.
Actually, for just a second, my argument's a little bit more complex than that. It's that we have the same obligations, and I think this may actually relate to your worldview in the sense that if you have a child who has the capacity for adult intelligence, don't you have an obligation to do what you can to make it possible for them to achieve that potential? And my argument is that we have that same relationship of obligation to great apes, not just to illustrate an ethical point, but because it is, in fact, the same obligation. Similarly,
but you're right. I mean, it does exactly that. It creates a responsibility on the part of the creators. And is that some place where we want to go?
My argument is that we have that responsibility because we share a moral community with the great apes already. And I think this is part of the difference between your perspective and mine. The human racist, what I call the human racist perspective, argues that you only have moral obligations to other human beings, genetically identical human beings.
Well, what I would add to that, James, is that let's say that you and I agree to disagree on a particular point. If you set that aside for a moment, one of my questions would be in terms of the ethics of transhumanism or genetic alterations of, you know, I also have questions, I guess, about even genetically altering crops. But I'm not an anti-technology guy. I only have concerns about, mostly about just let's make sure if we're going to do things in terms of transgenically altering food, let's be very sure about what that means in terms of its impact on our environment before we get there. So it might interest you to know that when I look at things like foods, I might not be in the religious camp that you think I'm in. I only have just strong concerns that we not do things, that we not let Pandora out of the box until we know, and it somehow do these things through proper long-term testing studies. I don't trust the FDA or anybody else like that. And so I have a question about some of that. But then when it comes to intelligent species, thinking life forms, that's where it becomes far more concerning to me, in that I think if you start playing God, you become responsible. Let's say you take a chimpanzee or another creature, and you upgrade its intelligence to the point that it then begins to discern some of these more humanized ideas of eternity and God and why am I here, and you know what I'm saying? And it becomes more complex. If we do that, if we take that role as God, we have to become responsible like God to those species that we create. I think that's an enormous step forward. Now, I'm not an intelligent guy like you. I don't have the credentials that you have. I was a pastor for 25 years. I'm somewhat of a theology and history student. The only PhD I have is one that will be conferred on me next year. And this is just in a very small field of religion. I can't think these great thoughts like guys like you do. But I am publicly aware of some of our responsibilities, and because I have a news service that reaches 10 million people a month, I have some responsibility, I think, to raise these things to public awareness, and until somebody can illustrate to me that some of what... And by the way, I think we're already going there. I have no question about what's going to happen in terms of future biological transgenics. I already believe we're going there. We are going to go there. That's the reason why some of our leading legal institutions have been conferring already.
This is one of the things that's always puzzled me about the prophetic worldview, is that you see a divine game plan that's already been laid out, and you're trying to interpret what the events of the world are and what human obligations might be as a part of that game plan, but you already know what the result's going to be. You know, you already know that the righteous are going to be saved, and that there's going to be a kingdom established, and so on and so forth. But in that context, isn't it possible, just as you acknowledge that it's possible for some people to confuse the actions of Satan and think that they're actually the actions, you know, the actions of the Antichrist, and think that they're the actions of the forces of God, isn't it possible that just as you believe yourself that humans are the result of guided panspermic genetic manipulation by some kind of divine alien presence, or at least that that's a possibility, that the contemporary genetic manipulations, the contemporary efforts to enhance humanity and create different kinds of cognitive and physical enhancement might itself be a fulfillment of different kinds of divine promise or divine intervention?
Well, I'm not sure. In other words, if, like I said earlier, if I just subscribed to evolution, I don't think I would see biologically altering species by crossing species barriers and blending them into some wholly new creature. That would not be a natural evolutionary process.
But I'm sure you saw the news recently that for about a million years after humanity started to develop as a separate species, there seems to be evidence that we interbreeded with our closest hominid cousins.
Well, those are very disputed conclusions. What I would admit to you, James, is that it's obvious that our environment has impacted our evolution. People are taller today than they used to be. So I believe that there certainly are things within the cosmic order as we perceive it that impact and change us as a species. But at the deepest level, it's still up until now, a man, a woman, sperm, ovum. At some point, if you look at this in a Judeo-Christian Islamic way, God inserts the soul into the species. Those are things that are beyond our they're beyond our control up until now.
Well, wait, Christ wasn't a product of a man and a woman.
No, that's right.
So, you know, is this part of the problem, that the effort to create non-traditional kinds of reproduction is in fact, horning in on God's territory?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think you might be horning in on God's territory. I think there could be something about creation from a fundamentalist religious point of view that needs to remain within the hands of God. If you're talking about the creation of intelligent species, but let me just help you with your question to me. It's kind of a moot point because we're going there anyway. So when I'm talking about these issues right now, I don't really spend a great deal of time trying to argue against those who would take us to a human plus future, because I think they're going. I think we're going there. I think that Oxford, the conference that was held there recently, some of our other leading law schools are already beyond that question. We already see that we are headed towards not just a transhumanist future, but a future in which biotechnology is going to be used to change all kinds of things. All kinds of living specimens are going to be different in the future than they are right now.
So it's not a Christian's obligation to attempt to stop these technologies?
I don't know if it's their obligation. It's not my obligation, and they're not going to stop it anyway. It is going to happen. And so for me, then, the question really becomes, we need to debate the ethics of it right now. You know, for instance, I read an article not long ago. You probably read the same article, or at least you've entertained these same discussions with other people that are in your field. It was in the Haaretz, as I remember, the Jewish newspaper. It was talking about Rabbi Bosiesko, or whatever his name is. But they were talking about these questions, and it was his point that, you know, if you made a being through genetic duplication, it would not be considered a human. Now, he's a rabbi. He's one of the leading thinkers in Jerusalem, and he said it would be clear beyond all doubt that that life form that would be created in some scientific institution would be an animal, but it would not be a human. It would not have a soul.
Actually, I'm surprised to hear that. The Orthodox rabbinate has, in general, been pretty embracing of genetic manipulation and cloning technology, insofar as it's a reproductive technology. Because,
well, you go and do a Google search and
I'll do that because
I think the article was called "Does a Clone Have a Soul?" And that was the whole discussion. And that, by the way, there's other names that are listed in that article. from the Jewish community, and this rabbi, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. I think it was Boshko or something like that. Is a highly respected thinker, and
because the rabbinate's opinion is that embryonic stem cell cloning and reproductive cloning both should be permitted, if it's because breeding is a mitzvah, having going forth and multiplying is a mitzvah. It's a blessing. So, but you know, I'm sure that there are rabbis who don't agree with that.
Well, but my point was, the reason I remember that article in particular was it raised different ethical questions. These are questions, by the way, that might not have even been an issue to me. It illustrated that it was an issue to them within their religious world view, and that article went into all kinds of things. If a woman is cloned, who's the clone's father? According to certain Jewish beliefs, and if, for instance, I remember the article talked about if a child was born from the womb of a surrogate cow, could it be ritually slaughtered? If it's not a human, then could it be offered as a sacrifice? So what I'm saying is that whether people like it or not, any of us, you, me, anybody, whether we like it or not. The Judeo-Christian Muslim ethic, even though I know there are some religions that don't necessarily agree with this, but whether people like it or not, that's what continues to guide our laws here in the U.S. and also in other places around the world. And in my opinion, the leaders of transhumanism, we're not going to make it very far, even if their arguments are well thought out in terms of science. They're not going to make it very far in terms of legislation or law or polity or policy or anything else, unless they come to appreciate that worldview is there. And at this early stage in our country, it's what dominates Congress. It's what dominates the politicians. It's what dominates the lawmakers. It's what dominates our Supreme Court, and people need to learn to speak directly to those the concerns of that majority community, because they still cling to those kind of old-fashioned ideas of God and humanity and the whole notion of playing God without the benefit of being omnipresent and omniscient. Is not something that most of those people are ever going to be comfortable with. By the way, I seem to remember, and you can tell me about this, but I seem to remember at one time that you actually agreed with Jeremy Rifkin on some of these questions and had great concerns about it. And then the longer you and I'm not putting any words in your mouth. I just seem to remember this. You can tell me if I'm wrong. At some point, you learned better of that, and your own research led you down a different trail. But there's a lot of people. You've debated Margaret Somerville, and I know you're aware of Leon Cass, who sat on the president, or was the chair, actually, for the President's Council for Bioethics. There's guys like Joe Carter for the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity, that's primarily a religious institution, might as well be. Bill Joy, the co-founder of Sun Microsystems. So there's a lot of people out there who would not necessarily put themselves in my worldview. They wouldn't put themselves in any kind of fundamentalist camp. Some of them would. Well, Leon Cass would, but some of the others I've named would not. And yet, you know, they recognize that probably here's two things. First of all, our transhuman, our post-human future as we know it today is inevitable. Inevitable. And I always say that when I do shows. Whether you like it or not, we're going there. So then the question becomes, ought we not now to be debating these issues from every kind of worldview? That's what I think we should do. Frankly, I can learn from you. And you may not be able to learn anything from me, but you do recognize that it's this kind of old-fashioned thinking that dominates most of our legislative process and laws today, and if transhumanism is ever going to go anywhere, they're going to have to talk about what concerns people like
well,
me.
Well, just let me say, I completely agree with what you said that, you know, America is a very religious country, and the influence of faith is very pervasive in the rest of the world, maybe not in Western Europe, but in the rest of the world, and that although I am a non-believer in
theistic religion. I'm a Buddhist and a Unitarian. I'm also a sociologist, and I did my bachelor's thesis on Pentecostalism, and I'm very cognizant of the need to reach out to people of faith and make arguments in terms of both secular and religious ethics. So, you know, I've been cultivating religious transhumanist dialogue for some time. I don't know if you're aware, but we had a conference 2 years ago in Toronto on religion and transhumanism. We published a special issue of that. You know, we had Tom Peters talk about theology and religion at our conference at Stanford, and so on. So, you know, it has been an ongoing concern. We just recognized the Mormon Transhumanist Association in Utah. It's one of the latest religious transhumanist organizations. We have members of all the different world faiths as a part of our World Transhumanist Association. But I do think, you know, there is a difference between the kinds of religiosity that can accept a co-creator role for humanity as a part of the ongoing evolution of humanity, and those who think that this is a line too far, that there's some kind of divine prescription on how far humanity should be involved in its own self-evolution.
Well, and I guess I'm probably there to some extent. I mean, I think if you accept, I wasn't back there, by the way, when God did all this creating, so I can only hypothecate about what some of this stuff means. But if you accept the idea of divine creation, and if you accept the idea that it was God who put limits, barriers between the species, you note that. You had mentioned earlier, you know, that there was some discussion recently about whether we were procreating with species that don't exist now. They might have even affected our evolution. But on the other hand, you have to use special techniques to cause some, you know, a donkey and a horse and a mule. There's techniques you have to use because they won't naturally crossbreed. And so then the question comes into play, if there was a creator, why did he put these barriers between certain species so that they can involve themselves in the physical act of sex, but they can't recreate after they don't create a, you know, a man and a monkey doesn't create a human Z.
Well, if a Chihuahua can interbreed with a Saint Bernard, it doesn't seem entirely out of bounds that an early human hominid might have been able to interbreed with one of its hominid cousins. But actually, we are at the end of our time on that pleasant thought, which has entertained many. I do want to thank you, Mr. Horn, for coming on. And I've been speaking with Tom Horn. He's the he founded RaidersNewsUpdate.com, which is a news site, and is the author with his wife, Nita, of Arrowman Gate. Are you working on another novel or book? I know you've got a couple nonfiction books out.
Actually, we're working on another book. I'm working on another book right now called Angel in the Whirlwind is the working title. It has to do with the catastrophic future that I think this current administration would take us to if they could. So I'm not working on any fiction right now. My wife is working on a book, but it's more of a women's issues book.
As soon as you get Whirlwind done, I will definitely have you back on. I always love to bring on Christians who take a whack at the Bush administration for
reason. Actually, the title might be something closer to A Demonologist Looks into the Heart of the White House, because if you really subscribe to what's happening within this current administration, it would make you a believer in the apocalypse.
I may not be a believer in traditional Christian theology, but I do believe in the apocalypse. So.
Yeah, and they're trying to take us there.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for coming on today.
Well, thank you for inviting me on.
And now for a short taste of next week's interview with Phil Collins. Again, Mr. Collins is the author of The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship and Examination of Epistemic Autocracy from the 19th to the 21st Century. He co-authored that with his brother Paul Collins, and he can be read at conspiracyarchive.com.
You consider yourselves, you and your brother, believers in an end times prophetic timeline in which the conspiracies that you're talking about play a role, And in particular, like my previous guest that I talked to, Tom Horn, who seems to believe that there's a preordained role for transgenic research and biotechnology in creating some of the scions of Lucifer and Satan in this end times prophecy. Do you also see transhumanism having that role, or is your concern more of an ideological critique of an irreligiosity on the part of the advocates of these secular ideologies?
Well, I concern myself predominantly with the irreligiosity of the ideologies that are promulgated by such individuals. As for an end times, as for biblical end times and an apocalypse and what have you, I do believe that it will happen. I do believe in prophecy. However, I'm very careful because many Christian end time prophecy scholars and what have you make the big fat mistake of attempting to set dates, of attempting to ascribe specific end time roles to specific individuals, specific movements, specific governments. And that's a real big no-no, especially because Jesus Christ made it quite clear that nobody would know the day or the hour of his coming. And so when people attempt to say that, for instance, that the Bush administration is going to usher in the Antichrist, they are attempting to set a timetable to the events as they are supposed to unfold according to Scripture. And that's a real problem, because then basically they start developing I guess you could call it an abdication theology, where they figure, well, it doesn't really matter. We don't have to resist tyranny. We don't have to resist any sort of evil, because the sooner that this happens, the sooner we get raptured and we go to be with Jesus. And the simple fact of the matter is that, again, they disregard what Jesus said, and that they would not know the hour of the time, that none of us really would. And so I'm very careful about trying to fit the present world political dynamics into a biblical Christianity framework. I simply look at what principles these people adhere to, and try to show how many of them are antithetical with biblical Christianity, and not just biblical Christianity, but also with Orthodox Judaism and Islam, and even a few other non-Christian faiths, such as some of the more favorable strands of Buddhism and Hinduism. Really, the problem is when you start developing a little eschatological calendar of your own.
So check back for that interview with Philip Collins, the author of The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, an Examination of Epistemic Autocracy from the 19th to the 21st Century, next week on Change Surfer Radio. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@IEET.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at IEET.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.